The Monocle Quality of Life Conference returns, and this time we're touching down in Zurich. Join Monocle's editors and a lineup of tack-sharp panelists for lively debate, informed conversation, and top-notch hospitality from the 28th to the 30th of June. Find out more and book your ticket now at conference.monocle.com.
Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on the programme.
It's clear that more than ever, we need to link things together. We need to come together. And I think if we make cities which are not convivial to that, then I don't think architecture is helping.
How can you make the public engage with design? That's one of the answers the British architect David Chipperfield is trying to find, and we'll hear all about it. We also meet the mayor of Helsinki to talk all things related to the Venice Biennale. And finally, we profile the Slovak architect who wants to become the next mayor of Bratislava. That's all coming up over the next 30 minutes right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. So welcome to this week's episode of The Urbanist. Last week, Monocle's team headed to Italy for the opening of the Venice Architecture Biennale. Under the theme Free Space, each nation was asked to interpret it in each pavilion, be it through libraries, churches, or an immersive experience. Oh yes, we had a few of those. Monocle's design editor, Nolan Giles, was in Venice all of last week, reporting, well, he says so, and he got a chance to catch up with the British architect David Chipperfield for this interview. Chipperfield has recently opened a show in Vicenza, the David Chipperfield Architects Works 2018, which showcases his work through the years and also that of his studio. The issue of engaging the public with the practice of architecture has become one of the main pursuits of Chipperfield, and that's reflected in his latest project, a book about planning and urbanism. Titled On Planning, A Thought Experiment, it was co-edited by him and by Simon Kretz, and he told Nolan all about this and so much more.
I was approached, invited to be a mentor in the Rolex Mentor Program. Rolex have this very generous program that they do to put mentors and proteges together to give the opportunity of an older professional and a younger professional to have a year-long or 18-month-long relationship and dialogue. It's not a professor-student, it's a dialogue between two professionals of different points in their professional life. I felt that in 18 months, or the 12 to 18 months, it's not very viable to be involved in a project, because a project always takes 3 years, the quickest term. So I thought the best thing would be for us to discuss theoretical work together and use the opportunity and the privilege of this time and this space to step a little bit outside of normal practice and contemplate things which I believe are profoundly important to the practice of architecture and, of course, to societal issues.
And you're saying that architects, particularly in the UK, don't seem so interested in planning. But do you think when you're talking to younger architects, they are thinking about the city a little bit more holistically and what they want to do, or do they still want to make big, beautiful statement buildings?
No, I'm sort of optimistic about the younger generation. They are realizing that architecture is more than just building iconic buildings. They are disenfranchised, they're disenamored, and we're seeing evidence, you know, in modest ways of young architects applying themselves and getting stuck in to trying to do small housing projects. And, you know, it's sort of guerrilla warfare, but I think that's great, and I think one needs to encourage them. At the same time, it's just disappointing that the people that could do much more with a swipe of a pen do nothing. Why aren't we dealing with this? Why are we leaving it to poor young architects who are struggling to demonstrate the importance of social housing, the importance of being societally connected? Why are we leaving it to them to do it by working late without fees and normally thankless clients?
Can I ask, when you're talking about this issue of the developers having the power, and in London specifically, are there parts of London or specific buildings in London where you, as an architect, see the everyday person encountering a problem that maybe they don't even see themselves?
Well, I think we are incredibly adaptive. I mean, we do adapt. Humans are incredibly good at doing that. So we sort of get on with it. We've realized that architecture can't change your life, but it can remind and encourage those aspects of society that need to be encouraged. And we know that the last years have been focused slightly towards sort of selfish and individualistic tendencies that modern society seems to be encouraging. I mean, we know that. It's not that complicated to talk about it. I mean, I don't want to talk about it as a sociologist, but certainly we know that there's a whole load of issues that are tending to weaken the sort of collective moments. But despite that, we're all sitting here in Venice. I mean, why the hell we come all the way to Venice to look at a few, you know, we want to congregate, we want to share, we want to belong. So cities and architecture should respond to that, as well as giving people the ability to be on their own. And the machinery for delivering those spaces or those opportunities where you can be part of something common, as opposed to being in your own apartment, being in your office, being a specific functional thing. And that's what this Biennale is a bit about. Who's going to give us, who's going to provide that environment where we might congregate, where we might, as it were, remind ourselves of not our individual concerns, but our collective concerns. And I would have thought going forward, issues that we're dealing with, whether these are to do with, you know, social issues or environmental issues, issues of sustainability, it's clear that more than ever, we need to link things together. We need to come together to solve these. And the young generation needs as much encouragement as possible. And I think if we make cities which are not convivial to that, then I don't think architecture is helping.
And when you go to a place like Zurich, or, you know, somewhere where there is that opportunity provided by the government for developments to be a bit smarter, to have these incredible public spaces, do you see citizens thinking a bit more about spaces themselves? They appreciate it, naturally, but do you think it adds value as well to them as people?
Well, I think if you walk around the sort of discussions about new projects and planning in London, you will hear a lot of conversation about public space. You probably hear more discussion about public space in London than anywhere else. It's a little bit suspicious because, in a way, everyone knows that they have to justify investment by what they might give back. So I think we're up to speed on the idea that projects provide public space. It tends to be a little bit confused with retail space. So every public space we have now is just a giant outdoor refectory. But that's fine, and let's not get upset about that. But I think the bigger issue is the way that the city has become zoned, and that the public spaces in the center of the city, and I would say even in Zurich, I mean, Zurich's not immune to this, that as values go up, the city starts to sort of cleanse. And that's not the city that we sort of like. I think we all like cities which are diverse, where you don't just have areas where people go and have expensive dinners and go shopping and other areas where they live. The big issue, I think, for the city is how do we integrate housing into the fabric, and not just housing for rich people and not just speculative housing, but how do we, against the market, because investors do not want to build very reasonably priced housing. An investor doesn't go to the bank and say, my idea is to build the best quality housing for the lowest possible price. We've got this new concept. The bank say, well, I'm not sure that concept. I think you've got them the wrong way around. You know, the cheapest product for the highest price. That's how business works. And that's fine, except who is going to build affordable housing in a meaningful way that isn't just a bit of decoration? And who is going to engage that? And the developers are not going to do it on their own. And it's no good just building swathes of it somewhere outside. It should be part of urban planning. And we know that where there is sort of social mix, the city's nicer, it's better.
So do you think urban planning as a profession, as a term, as a concept, and urbanism has a bit of an image problem? Is it not sexy enough?
Well, I think so. I think, you know, you would have thought in these years of where there's so much building going on, the planning departments would be rich. They would have been somehow getting a percentage of all this, and therefore have resources and have nice offices and employed good staff and have enough. But it's somehow been the opposite. It's very suspicious that exactly when we're building most, the planning departments have less and less people. That's very strange.
And can you quickly take us to Vicenza? What can we experience there? What's going to be happening?
Vicenza was a nice invitation for us to show our work in the Basilica, and we were sort of tempted to do it. And it's always dangerous because it's not easy to show your work in a meaningful way. We didn't really want to do a sort of retrospective. On the other hand, maybe it's a good opportunity to think about how you explain work. So actually what I did was to say, why don't we just show current work, work that we're working on now or we've just finished, and therefore all the teams are still somehow in place, like a little mini Biennale. Just tell them, here's your corner. How do you show this project? How are you going to show the James Simon Gallery? How are you going to show the Korean building, the Moro Pacific building? How are you going to show? And in a way, challenge everybody to sort of say, how would you best explain that project? So it didn't come across as a sort of corporate presentation.
So if you're putting your curator's hat on now, we're here at the Biennale where there's so much being shown, so many complicated ideas. People can take very different approaches to showcasing the merits of architecture, but often it just ends up with people reading a placard to try and understand what it's about. How do you kind of best visualize your work, your architecture, in an environment where you can't actually touch and feel and experience the architecture?
Well, it's a very good point. I mean, I don't know. I think that is the challenge. We only have 4 or 5 methods to do it. So it's drawings, models, films, photography, and dialogue. So it is difficult. And as you say, the best way of seeing architecture is in the flesh. On the other hand, you know, we're not like painters. We don't have things that we can just hang on the wall and they are self-explanatory. So an architect's drawing, you can hang an architect's drawing on the wall, but it doesn't explain anything unless it's a drawing by Leverance or something, and it's a historical artifact. So I think it's doomed to fail, but I think it's a good idea every 2 years for the profession to come together, celebrate architecture, and just think about how to talk about it, and probably complain about this not being done very well in that moment. But it's a good focus, and thanks to Venice for doing it so well and providing us a destination that guarantees we come back year after year. I mean, I think if we were in Kiev, where the World Championships are tomorrow night, I'm not sure it would be a sustainable architectural Biennale, or anywhere, even in London, or, you know, so hats off to Venice. And the Biennale, you know, having worked with the Biennale as an organization, they are really impressive.
And just one final question. I haven't experienced it to the extent that I experienced it in Milan during the Salone there, but this kind of way of perceiving architecture through your phone and everything has to be via a screen, when you're someone that your work is so tactile, do you think architects and designers are kind of under threat in a way?
No. No, I think the more virtual stuff we have, the more physical we need. I mean, we've just done a shop for an online fashion company in Canada, Essence. I keep saying, well, why do you need a shop? Is it for business? No, of course not. I mean, but it'd be nice to have a space, you know. So you find that even something where their whole existence is based online, they just had such great fun doing something physical. And what's interesting about that is that they can ask from the beginning, say, so what is that about? It's not a shop. So actually, it's fantastic because it's a real celebration of, I don't know whether you've seen the images of it, it's just a giant concrete block. Relentless. And the client is just saying, no, I want something super physical. So I think that the virtual world will maybe have just as much influence the opposite way.
Well, that was the British architect David Chipperfield at the Venice Biennale. Nolan also had a chance to turn his gaze to the Nordic nations while in Venice. Finland decided to unpack the theme of free space by creating a library, a vital element that makes everyone feel part of a city, which was showcased in a pavilion that was designed by the legendary Alvar Aalto. Jan Vapaavuori is the mayor of Helsinki, and he told Nolan all about his country's participation at the Biennale.
First of all, we started by telling that the weather is as good in Helsinki as it is in Venice today, but during the wintertime it's not. And that's why, I mean, for us, you need to have open spaces also indoor in Finland for people to gather together, which is not maybe the case in some other countries. And that's why a huge amount of the so-called open spaces in Finland actually are indoor. And that's why you need places like this. But my vision of Helsinki is that it's a combination of rational functionality. The topic of our strategy is that we want to be the most functional city in the world. And then a combination with that and some kind of original roughness. So, I mean, we are proud of the society which simply works. You can trust everyone, there is no corruption. You can trust the police, you can trust the timetables for buses. And if you call an authority, they will reply and so on. Then at the same time, you need to plan and develop a city for urban life, for people to enjoy their life there. And that is, I think, the most difficult part of it, that you need to have both dimensions. And it has to work, but at the same time, it has to be fun. It also need to have unpredictable dimensions. And there, both architecture, arts and culture comes in and plays a big role. And that's why we are actually dedicating quite big, quite important, quite, you could say, valuable spaces in downtown Helsinki, not for housing, not for offices, but for open spaces. We are, for example, developing a special area which we dedicate only for events, even if we know that we could make quite a lot of money in if we built some apartments there. We are having this new central library downtown Helsinki, opposite to the parliament. We are opening a new museum at the place of the former main bus station. We are planning a biennale also in Helsinki and so on. So you need to have these two angles at the same time, securing that the society works. And that is especially important because we think that the biggest strength of the Finnish society is then trust between people and trust between people and the government. So it has to work. But at the same time, it has to be fun. It has to give space for people to create their own things, grassroots level ideas and events and whatsoever.
And you've also got a lovely public sauna as well. I'm really interested to know, when you're talking to architects in your city and you're talking about the creative economy and about working there, what are the kind of conversations you're having and how are you getting architects inspired to contribute to the city?
It's not an easy task because you have these two dimensions, that at the same time it has to be of good quality. For us in our weather circumstances, I mean, it's more challenging task to construct a building for the next 50, 100 years in Helsinki than in some other places. And then at the same time, it has to be original enough. Of course, we have a good legacy from Alvar Aalto and several other well-known Finnish architects. And that is part of my mission, that I also want to have more international architects coming to Finland. So it can't only be the way that the Finnish architects go abroad and do some great works around the world, but we also need a bigger international influence in Helsinki. And it's always a not that easy task in a small society. It often happens that one generation of architects, they are all doing the same, more or less. And that's why you need to get some ideas also from other places, other ages and other countries.
We're here at the Finnish Pavilion. We're surrounded by other national pavilions. You're here, you know, as the mayor of Helsinki, representing your country, representing your city. How much is this whole biennale kind of about design, soft power, about nations kind of showing just how great they are, how creative they are? And do you think that influences things a bit more broadly?
I do think that in today's world, one of our biggest issues is that the so-called Western democracy is threatened. And we really need to defend the democracy, and we need to be able to create some kind of self-defense vehicles for the democracy. And there I think that we really need to pay attention and remember and remind ourselves what are the basic building blocks of a well-functioning democracy. And there it is a question of equality, of trust between people. I do believe that the better people are educated, the more seriously they take democratic processes and so on. And for us, libraries is a symbol for this. Libraries are actually a symbol both for the education, an open society, civilization, democracy, freedom of speech. And architecture is then one way to tell the story of more fundamental issues and dimensions or topics of today's global challenges.
And you're going to have a look around and see the other exhibitions and kind of learn from the other nations a little bit, you think?
Definitely, yes. It often happens that everyone tells the same story. It has been like climate change for the last 5 or 10 years, or circular economy or whatsoever. But free space gives more options and possibilities to your own interpretation. And for us, it's libraries, and I can be 100% sure that it's not the story for any other of the pavilions. But it will be very interesting to see how they have interpreted the overall topic of free space in today's world's big challenges and what they are showing the rest of the world here.
And you might also meet some international architects to work in Helsinki.
I hope so. I really hope so, yes. But it's important. I'm 100% sure that all the societies which have been able to flourish during the whole history of the mankind, in most cases, a success story of putting people from different cultures together and creating something together.
That was the mayor of Helsinki, and that was our Nolan Giles reporting from the Venice Biennale. This is The Urbanist.
The Monocle Quality of Life Conference returns for a fourth year, and this time we're touching down in Zurich. Join Monocle's editors and a lineup of tack-sharp panelists for lively debate, informed conversation, and top-notch hospitality. Whether you're an architect, city maker, retailer, media mogul, or chef, pick up a ticket and be part of the debate on upping quality of life across the board. This year, there will also be a special focus on entrepreneurship and making it in the city. We'll be diving headlong into all Zurich has to offer, from fine food, Swiss wine and river swims, to private tours of the best shops and ateliers. So why not join us from the 28th to the 30th of June? Find out more and book your ticket now at conference.monocle.com.
You're listening to The Urbanist on Monocle 24. I'm Andrew Tuck. Now, let's deviate from northern Italy to look at Slovakia. The country's capital is famous for its rich history and its stunning location on the river Danube. But when it comes to urban development and city management, it suffers from negligence and rather a lot of inefficiency. The Slovak architect Matoš Valo wants to change that. He's one among several candidates running for Bratislava mayor, and he's even written a book about what he will do to improve the city if he wins this autumn elections. Monocle's Alexei Koroliov has caught up with him in Bratislava to discover what an architect turned mayor could do for a city.
I deeply believe that we are going to win this election. We understand during past years that we cannot change our city with the bottom-up approach, and that we need to step on the other side of the river or barricade and become the part of the system of the municipality.
Ako architekt, aktivista a človek, ktorý má rád Bratislavu, sa už roky snažím realizovať nápady, ktoré zlepšujú kvalitu života Bratislavčanov. Predkladám riešenia.
My name is Matoš Valo. I'm 40 years old. I'm from Bratislava, Slovakia. Yeah, and I'm running for mayor.
Pochopil som, že ak chcem veci zásadne meniť k lepšiemu, musím ich meniť znútra a musí nás byť viac.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
I meet Matoš in the streets outside his campaign headquarters in central Bratislava, and he immediately points out the things he would change.
I'm ashamed to say that you see very basic stuff. There is a strip of greenery on the other side of the street. It's not cut. This is very basic. Somebody's cutting the lawn, somebody's cutting the grass in the city. You know? Street furniture, there is no here. It can be here. And you see how the signature, street signature are looking. There is no real system into it. And I'm an architect, so I believe that our environment is influencing our lives, how we are living, how we are communicating with other people in this public space. So even if I like very much this street, it's full of trees, but somebody should take more care about this street.
Matoš is a newcomer in Slovak politics, but he says being an architect helps.
So architecture is about putting together different opinions, different complex parts. If I want to do a project in Bratislava, I need another 20 professionals to be able to complete the project. So we have in our DNA the thing to be able to organize different streams, different opinions. And it's very important. So I think the architect is a good profession for mayor office.
So what is wrong with Bratislava? Why are you doing this?
I believe Bratislava is a fantastic city. It has a fantastic position between Danube and Carpathian, very close to Vienna, Budapest, and Prague. And I believe there are a lot of fantastic people who are actually living in Bratislava today. But Bratislava is not able to use this potential. This was maybe more like a political statement.
It sounded like, yeah.
Yeah, but when you're going into details, and let's start in real details, the quality of public space is very bad. The city don't have a good communication tools with its own inhabitants. And if we are talking about problems, let's go more in a zoom out again. There wasn't a real discussion in our city about identity of our city. Or let's say, what do we kind of understanding what Bratislava is and what Bratislava can be in the future? And if you are zooming more and more, we don't have like serious urban plan.
But why do you think that you are the one that's going to solve all these problems?
I have a fantastic plan. I worked on this plan many years, but mainly last 2 years with 76 professionals from many different professions or part of city management. We call it in the end Plan B, but after we call it like Plan Bratislava. I used to say now that if you have any questions, any difficult question about any detail of the city, just give me one phone call and I will know the answer, because I know all people from different professions who are dealing with the city now.
Yeah. Spoken like a true politician. Well, you know, the book, I'm looking at it now, and it looks nice and pretty. I can see its appeal to younger people, students. What about the older people, the older generations?
Of course, we don't have illusion that this book will be the topic of discussion on Sunday family lunches, you know. We know that it's still a book with 300 pages of detailed information. And I understand that the best way is to talk to people directly. And that is what I'm also doing. Last 4 or 5 months, I met more than 30 meetings about the Plan Bratislava, of course, about the book, but also starting to be also about my candidacy a lot. And I understand that this is something I like. This is something I'm interested in it, to meet people personally and talk, ask, listen. The public space, the pavement, how the street is looking, greenery, trees, must be in perfect shape. That's saying a lot about the city.
Yeah.
Back to the street for a final few remarks.
Everybody's traveling a lot. Everybody can go in any city in Europe. They see the difference. Let's talk about, for example, about the visual smog. We have an incredible amount of billboards in our city. And if you're going to other cities, for example, in Brno, where there is this problem is not so huge, you see the difference. It's difficult to really explain it to people. I understand your question, but I think people would like to be in a public space, but it has to have good quality.
That was Monocle's Alexei Koroliov speaking with Slovak architect Matoš Valo, who's hoping to become the next mayor of Bratislava. And that's all for this week's episode of The Urbanist. The show was produced by Carlotta Rabello and is edited by David Stevens. To play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, here's Beirut with Postcards from Italy. Thank you for listening, city lovers.